The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
So during the 18th century, the world changed forever. At the start of the century, humans lived in an agrarian society with all work being performed by hand or by harnessing the power of animals. That century, however, saw the harnessing of different energy sources, including steam, coal, and petrol, which were then used to power machines. Over the following 200 years, the very nature of human work and existence had a fundamental shift. Increasingly, we shifted the lion's share of physical effort to powered tools. As you're probably aware, that period of time is known as the Industrial Revolution. I believe we're at the beginning of another revolution, one that will shift not more physical work away from people, but the work of the mind. It doesn't have a fun name yet, but let's call it the AI Revolution. Catchy, right? The Industrial Revolution was not without its detractors. Famously, the Amish in particular, to this day, continue to reject many of the advances that it brought due to a fundamental belief that hard work is considered to be godly. The question that I want to address tonight is, how should we as the church think about and respond to the AI Revolution as we live through it? Should we be emulating the Amish and steer clear? Or maybe we should be embracing it wholeheartedly. Or is there a third way? Before we dive in, there's a couple of introduction things that I want to just touch on. Firstly, I think it's valuable to give a little bit of the context that I bring to this topic. I am by trade, in a broad sense, a software developer. I work in an industry full of people who live being on the cutting edge of technology. And the development of AI is something that really gets them excited. Until recently, I spent 5 years as an IT consultant working with a software platform that is increasingly incorporating artificial intelligence. Over the next decade, I'm fully expecting that the fundamental nature of what I do will be irreversibly changed. Secondly, I want to acknowledge that we all come to this topic with a bias. As Douglas Adams wrote, I've come up with a set of rules that describe our reactions to technologies. One, anything that's in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things. I think I'm pretty safe in saying that just about everybody in this room, myself included, fits into that third category. So if you're here tonight with the view that artificial intelligence is against the natural order of things, I'd like to ask you to put that aside for a while. If you're in the second category where you see AI as new and exciting and revolutionary, can I ask that you put that aside too? Finally, if you're in the first category where it's normal, ordinary, and just a natural part of the way the world works, can you please get back in your time machine? Because time travel is definitely against the natural order of things. So, with our biases put aside, let us begin. The idea of an artificial intelligence is something that's been depicted in fiction for about 150 years. If we want to include Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, we're looking at over 200. If I were to ask you for examples, you might say C-3PO, Wall-E, Vision, Lieutenant Data, Baymax, or Astro Boy. Or maybe you think more along the lines of HAL, Agent Smith, the Terminator, or Ultron. At this point, however, we don't have anything like them. So what is it? How can we define it? I'm a fan of Stephen Driscoll's definition, which he develops over the course of a page and a half. In his book, Made in Our Image, he concludes saying, an artificial intelligence, then, is something that is produced not through natural means, that can acquire complex, varied knowledge, and then apply that knowledge to solving complex, varied problems. At its core, an artificial intelligence is something that can take information, process it, and then produce a meaningful response. That's not a new concept. 30 years ago, we had this guy who would take a look at your document, try and match it against what it knew different types of documents looked like to try and provide assistance. It looks like you're writing a letter. In more recent times, we've had Siri and Alexa that have added in the ability to communicate in human speech and respond to a range of queries with a response of some kind. What we've seen over the last couple of years is a fundamental shift, but it's still the same fundamental concept that we've had for decades, but we now have the ability for AI programs to process immense amounts of information, including not just text, but audio, video, and interactions, and to be able to generate responses in all of those ways. That ability lends itself to a wide variety of applications, as I think you can begin to imagine. Tonight, I'm going to focus on three particular styles. I'll note, though, that the lines between these are fuzzy. There's significant, and I expect increasing crossover. I made the joke earlier that if you're comfortable with AI and think that it's just a natural part of the way the world works, then you're a time traveler. The first type of AI that we're going to look at, though, is one that really has become a big part of our lives without us even noticing, primarily because of how convenient it is. It's even got a catchy name, the algorithm. For anyone using social media, you're encountering the algorithm every day. It analyzes what we do and who we are and what we're interested in to be able to show us content that's relevant to us. The algorithm is why your TikTok, Instagram, or Facebook feeds are full of content that catches your attention and yet is so different to the feed of someone else with different interests. But it extends beyond social media too. It's the algorithm that recommends the next show or movie to watch on the various streaming services or shows you things that you might be interested in purchasing on Amazon. The algorithm ensures that we are constantly presented with things that are appealing to us. It's the very essence of convenience. The downside, however, is that it means that we're increasingly not pushed outside our comfort zone. We're not exposed to people and ideas that we disagree with, and it fosters an unfounded confidence in our own thoughts and opinions. The day I was preparing this section, I happened to be reading a book called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. He talks about a principle that he calls what you see is all there is. The idea is that our conclusions and biases are formed on the basis of what we see. Our brains don't naturally look for missing information in order to form well-rounded conclusions. Instead, they take the information that we have and draw conclusions from that. The algorithm, in an attempt to provide us with personally relevant content, is limiting our exposure to anything that might challenge us. So that's the AI that we're, for lack of a better term, comfortable with. Let's move on to the next one. A second type of AI, chatbots. In 1950, Alan Turing proposed a test that he unimaginatively called the Turing test, that he suggested would determine whether a machine could demonstrate human intelligence. The idea was essentially to perform a text-based conversation with an unknown entity and to identify whether or not they were human. A program would pass the Turing test if the tester thought that they were communicating with a human. This is the fundamental basis of chatbots. While the goal isn't necessarily to fool the user into thinking that they're communicating with a human, they do provide a comfortable way of interacting with machines. You may have used a chatbot without even realizing it. Companies will often provide a button at the bottom of their website where you can speak to someone if you've got a question or need help. The idea is that rather than sitting on hold for half an hour waiting for someone to be available, you can go to the website and you can chat to someone. Depending on the situation and the query, a single person might be able to handle a number of separate conversations at the same time, which they definitely couldn't do if you were talking to them over the phone. Even then, however, the person that you're talking to is limited in their ability to answer questions by how much they know. They'll have a knowledge base available with all of the information that they'll need, ideally. But that's not always clear or easy to navigate to get the exact answer to your question. And if they're talking to multiple people at the same time, then that's still going to take a while. Enter chatbots. The chatbot has the ability to process the entire knowledge base incredibly quickly to get you the answer that you're after. They're not trying to juggle multiple queries at the same time, so you've got their entire focus, so to speak. And talking to them is increasingly almost identical to talking to a real person. Plus, because they're not a person, they don't need to take meal breaks or go home overnight. Companies are able to provide top quality 24/7 service. Everybody wins, except maybe for people who work in call centers, of course. Let's apply that technology to another application, though. What about counseling and therapy services? This is an entire industry set up to help people process issues that they might be dealing with. Historically, you'll go and sit on a couch and talk to someone and, under the umbrella of patient-doctor confidentiality, work through your deepest, darkest secrets. That could be a really confronting experience, though. Can you really trust that the therapist isn't going to go and talk about you to other people? What if the counselor starts getting judgmental? Plus, you've got to actually go through the effort of scheduling a time to meet with them. And it's expensive. There are increasing reports of people actually using Alexa as a counselor. Alexa is always available. It communicates in a friendly, familiar voice. Alexa isn't going out for drinks with people where it's going to start talking to people about your issues. Maybe it's not actually therapy that you need, but you just want to talk to someone. Maybe a particular someone. Enter Character AI. Their tagline is personalized AI for every moment of your day. They provide the ability to create a chatbot of a particular person, any person. Maybe you want the ability to speak to Elon Musk whenever you want to, or Winston Churchill or Plato. Or you could talk to someone fictional like Captain America or King Arthur. You can speak to and build relationships with AI chatbots impersonating all of these people through Character AI. Chatbots are now at the point where people can and are genuinely forming emotional attachments with them, to the point where some people are preferring talking to them than actual people. The entire purpose of their existence is for the person that's talking to them, which is not the case for any real person. When you combine that with increasingly realistic text-to-voice technology and advances in robotics, well, let's just say that robot spouses are closer than we'd like to think about. And I'll leave that there. Our final type of AI that we'll look at tonight is known as generative AI. This is a bot that's capable of creating something new. Now, we've got a bit of a taste of this with chatbots. I did say that the lines were fuzzy. But this goes further. The simplest version of this is document generation. I mentioned earlier that until recently, I was a consultant. In the world of consultancy, there are a lot of reports that get written. They are the bane of our existence. They take a lot of time, and unless you're a particular type of person, they're incredibly boring to write. This work is increasingly getting done using generative AI. You ask it what you want, and it leverages its knowledge of the particular type of document that you need and its knowledge of the subject matter, and it produces a document for you. Now, it's not the point yet where it's perfect. You are going to have to spend a bit of time editing it, massaging it. But it'll reduce the time that it takes to create it by potentially days. And of course, not everybody needs to create 50-page documents all the time. But maybe you're not quite sure how to write an email. Just ask ChatGPT to write it for you. You can tell it what you're trying to communicate. Let it know the tone that you're trying to communicate in, and it'll give you a pretty good email. When it was time for me to leave my last job, I took a perverse joy in using the internal Gen AI system to compose the LinkedIn post that told everyone I was leaving. Now, to be fair, they were looking for use cases for the system. I decided that maybe they didn't need to know about that one. It's not just text that AI is capable of generating, though. Generative AI is capable of creating both images and videos. On one level, this ability is really helpful. Maybe you're creating a presentation and have a really specific idea for an image to illustrate your point. Or maybe you need a title slide for a talk on AI. Rather than hoping that someone else with more artistic ability than you has had the same really specific idea and created it already, you can ask a generative AI bot to create it. I have a friend who wanted some professional-looking photos of herself and was able to, by providing a couple of photos as a guide, get some photos that looked really good. Until you looked closely and wondered when she got a sixth finger, but, you know, it's not quite good at hands yet. When I was growing up, we had a common comment that we would use was pics or it didn't happen. The idea was that having a photo of something was acceptable proof of the story that was being told. So with that in mind, I think it's amazing that Pope Francis is staying fit by getting into the gym and playing basketball. Look at him. Now, of course he's not. But outside of the absurdity of it actually happening, why wouldn't you believe it based on these pictures? Unfortunately, we're at the point where images aren't proof of anything anymore. And substituting videos as acceptable proof isn't much more helpful either. As generative AI progresses, we are losing the ability to be able to verify the truth of somebody's claim. As we watch or we read the news, we're often provided with videos or images that verify the story that's being told. But it's increasingly possible that what we're being shown isn't real. The only thing that we're left to rely on is the trustworthiness of the one telling us and the hope that they haven't been fooled as well. So, having explored a few flavors of AI, we return to our question. How should we as the church think about and respond to the AI revolution? Being a good Baptist, I have three aspects that I think we need to consider. Firstly, AI forces us to consider what it means to be human. What is it that makes us significant as a species? Historically, we've pointed to our superior intelligence and our ability to create, although we're forced to acknowledge that at least on some level, we do see sparks of both intelligence and creativity in some animal species. Now we have created technology that is able to think and create at least comparably to us, if not better. In his book Robopocalypse, Daniel H. Wilson has an AI character say, "You humans are biological machines designed to create ever more intelligent tools. You have reached the pinnacle of your species. All your ancestors' lives, the rise and fall of your nations, every pink and squirming baby, they've all led you here to this moment where you have fulfilled the destiny of humankind and created your successor. You have accomplished what you were designed to do." Is this true? Are we just organic machines? Are we significant? Are we replaceable? Is there really any fundamental difference between us and whatever Siri will be in a decade? These are questions that the world has no good answers to. But we do. Scripture gives us a clear picture of who we are, where we've come from, and what makes us significant. In the very first chapter of the Bible, we see our creation. Genesis 1, 26 to 27 says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And then a chapter later, we see our creation again from a closer angle. "Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living creature." From the very beginning, we see that we were created in the very image and likeness of God. The thing that gives us life is his very breath. This is and always will be a crucial distinction between humanity and any kind of artificial intelligence. What about the idea that we're replaceable? The story of Scripture is that while we fully deserve to be wiped out and replaced, God continually chooses not to. In our sin, we'd reject our Creator over and over and over again. But God continues to show us mercy in sparing us. And not merely sparing us, but in choosing to restore us back to a relationship with him. Second aspect that we need to consider is the impact that artificial intelligence has on our relationships with each other. And considering the first two flavors of AI, we've already touched on some of the ways that it has the potential to break down and replace our relationships. Over the last couple of years, when I've had conversations with various colleagues about AI, I've joked that I've seen too many Terminator movies to be comfortable with it. As I've thought about it closely over the last couple of months, though, I'm convinced that the likely future doesn't look like Terminator. It's likely to look more like WALL-E. What do I mean? Maybe it's been a minute since you've seen that movie, if at all. Or maybe you've just got WALL-E and Eve on the brain and aren't quite sure where I'm going. If you haven't seen it, WALL-E is a movie about a trash compactor robot that's been left on Earth to clean it up after it becomes uninhabitable and all of the humans have left. It falls in love with another robot and adventures ensue. It's a great movie. I highly recommend it. About halfway through the movie, though, we see what's become of the human race. They're doing fine. They all escaped on a spaceship. They're all isolated. The humans live in their personal floating chairs, cruising around the spaceship watching TV. They're completely oblivious to the physical existence of anybody else. Everything that they do, every interaction, gets mediated through a screen. It's only when WALL-E gets in the way and dislodges one of them that they wake up, so to speak. I think we can all agree that people are hard. They're selfish. They have annoying personal traits. They're not always there when you need them. And sometimes they can really hurt us. And that's just our families. If there's something out there that can do everything that other people can do, but have us as their primary focus all the time, and if they ever do anything annoying, we can tell them and they'll never do it again and not resent us for that. Something that's right there when we need it, but we'll go and stand in a corner when we just need some me time. It can be a really appealing idea, can't it? Where we can feel drawn away from people due to their peopleness, AI has powerful factors that draw us to it. Outside of mimicking human interactions without the difficulties, it also has a draw on us when we're on our own. Today, AI has the ability to write narrative, generate video, and capture our attention by feeding us content that gives us that addictive dopamine hit. Put all of that together, and in a few years, we could very well have an AI platform with the ability to generate from scratch media that will capture our attention and hold it. Christian life is one that calls us to resist those tendencies to withdraw. As we've already seen, we are made in the image of God. And that image is deeply relational. Even before creation, we see that relationship is at the core of the Trinity. God says, "Let us make man in our image." Throughout the history of Israel, we see God placing a high emphasis not on individuals, but on groups of people. Even when he's dealing with individuals, the view is always wider. The prime example of God having a personal relationship is probably Abraham. But even in that relationship, we see that God is not just focused on that one man. In Genesis 12, we see God calling Abram out from among his people and setting the direction of not just his life, but that of his descendants. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." The idea of a monkish, solitary existence is something that is completely foreign in Scripture. The Christian life is not one that's just me and God, or me and my Bible, or me and my Bible and AI. Indeed, Hebrews 10 explicitly corrects those who think it's a good idea, saying, "And let us consider how to stir each up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day draw near." As AI draws people away from each other into their own self-contained bubbles, it should be a distinctive mark of the church that we draw closer together, that we should embrace the messiness and the difficulty of other people. We should be the ones who want to enter into the lives of our brothers and sisters and invite them into ours. The final thing that I think we need to consider is that there are things in life that deserve effort. One of the selling points of AI, particularly in a corporate environment, is that it lets us get rid of the menial, mundane tasks and lets us focus on the more challenging activities, the more fun activities. And that's great in theory. But sometimes that mundane work carries value and significance. Let's go back to relationships for a minute. For those of us who use social media, it's easy for us to keep up to date with what's going on in somebody's life by just following their posts on Facebook or Instagram. But that doesn't build a friendship. That's something that takes time and work. Friendships are built on time spent together, conversations, shared activities, and all of that over a sustained period of time. It takes work. In so many ways, artificial intelligence provides a shortcut. But there are things in life that we just can't take shortcuts with. We can't take the easy way out with our spiritual life. Just for fun, ask ChatGPT to summarize Romans 1. And here's what it says. Romans 1, written by the Apostle Paul, serves as an introduction to his letter to the Christian church in Rome. He introduces himself as an apostle set apart to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who is descended from David according to the flesh and declared to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead. Paul expresses his desire to visit the Roman Christians to strengthen their faith and share the gospel, which he calls the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew and also to the Greek. The second half of Romans 1 outlines humanity's rejection of God, leading to moral and spiritual decay. Paul explains that God's divine qualities and power are evident in creation, leaving people without excuse for unbelief. However, many have chosen to reject God, resulting in a downward spiral of idolatry and immorality. Because of their unwillingness to acknowledge God, he has allowed them to follow their own sinful desires, leading to various sins such as envy, murder, deceit, and malice. Paul warns that this behavior is deserving of God's judgment, but emphasizes the role of the gospel in offering salvation despite human sinfulness. Now, that took about 30 seconds to generate and maybe a minute to read. It's not bad. It gives you most of the key points. But it loses so much at the same time. It softens it. It takes out some of the more culturally inappropriate aspects. To fully understand and appreciate the chapter requires us to read it in full, probably multiple times. We need to sit with it, let it marinate in our soul. Maybe read a commentary or two, or listen to a sermon or ten to unpack the depths of it. Speaking of sermons, what if we want to take a shortcut the other way? Again, just for fun, ask ChatGPT to write a 40-minute conservative Baptist sermon on Matthew 18, 15 to 17, titled, "And the Winner Is." Why that prompt? Well, that's the passage and title for this Sunday's sermon. And here it is. Well, the start anyway. And no, I'm not giving it to Alan until after Sunday. It took about 2 minutes to generate, and it's not a bad sermon. In fact, aside from being short, it'll probably take about 10 minutes, not 40. It's actually really good. I'd expect updating the prompt to specify a word count rather than a time length would give me something that somebody could actually preach on a Sunday and nobody would notice. But think about how much we'd miss. We'd have a pastor who isn't prayerfully spending time in the Word to properly understand it and helping us as a unique congregation to apply it. Rather than being someone who's constantly growing spiritually and who is able to provide godly counsel when he's away from the pulpit, our pastor would become a glorified text of voice. It would mean that he would have time to spend doing other tasks, but he'd be neglecting his primary God-given role. What a loss. As Christians, we need to be thoughtful about what we ask AI to do for us. We need to recognize that there are times when slow and hard is infinitely more valuable than quick and easy. At the start of the evening, I asked that we put aside our biases, both for and against artificial intelligence. And I hope at this point you can see why. We have a tendency to view the world in black and white and label things as good or evil. But tools are generally inherently neither. They can be put to use in a variety of ways. We've talked about a couple of flavors tonight, but the potential applications are far wider than we've got into. When it comes to medicine, it's being used to analyze x-rays more reliably than any doctor, speeding up the development of medicines, and analyzing data from health monitoring systems to detect health issues early. I read just this week that it's been used on eye surgery to give better than 20/20 vision. In the world of finance, there's applications for risk analysis and fraud detection. It's being used to analyze security footage to try and find missing people. We're already seeing the development of self-driving cars, and it's being used for spacecraft navigation and satellite imagery. In my own field, it's being used to generate computer code, processes, and full-blown applications. At the same time, there are some very real ethical concerns at play as well that we haven't explored tonight. Questions around how in various applications it can be inherently biased due to the data that it's trained on, how chatbots can be manipulated to be truly horrifying, or even simply the ethics of having image generation applications trained on the work of human artists. These are all legitimate concerns, not just from a Christian worldview, but for everyone to consider. At the end of the day, though, Pandora's box has been opened. And there is no going back. The world has been and is continuing to be changed. The AI revolution is in full swing. Our question tonight has been, how do we think about AI and respond to it well as the church? I believe the answer is that we should respond cautiously and with eyes open. We should not respond out of fear, but recognize that in many ways it is a good gift of God. However, there are also potential dangers that we should be aware of. As we see it develop, let us be thoughtful, using it in ways that honor God and each other. Questions? No. The AI contributed to the bits that I explicitly called out and to some of the pictures. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. Look, it's at the most generous, it's shifting where our skills are at. Certainly we are not using our brains in the same way that we used to. Yeah. Absolutely. And look, let's be realistic. Potentially in 50, 100 years' time, that's not a skill that we need. But whether that's a good thing or not, I'll let everybody else be the judge.
From an educational perspective, we've been dealing with that idea that it's dumbing down students, but I went to a few conferences that encouraged us to teach students how to use AI to encourage higher order critical thinking. So, like, you have to be smart in how you use AI, and then when you get the result, you have to be smart and to discern and know, is that a good, you know, is that a good response, and what do I do with that information?
Yeah, look, I think a good example, so I mentioned that in software development, it's being used to generate code. The problem is it's not always good, and so you do still need to have a level of skill to be able to spot the errors. I think at least in the short term, the thinking is going to be in spotting the errors. Where it is, again, in 50 years' time, 10 years' time, is probably going to be better. It's absolutely going to be better. Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's certainly not perfect yet. However, it's only going to get better. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, look, I think the first thing is not to have that overtone of fear when it comes to it. Like we do need to recognize that it is good for things. But also having that cautiousness to go, hey, use it. It's a tool, but also there's a whole world out there. I think everybody's learning at this point. Like, it's, I think, 2 years now since ChatGPT kind of hit the news. So nobody's good at it yet. So yeah, it's a work in progress. That's probably one of the aspects that I would try and steer people away from. Try and steer people towards people. Like it's good in some aspects. Like if you're talking with a company, customer service, great. If you're talking to it as a replacement for people, that's I think the point where we need to steer away. I think it was about a month ago I saw somebody's a 14-year-old kid's life tragically end after talking to an AI. So yeah, that's certainly particularly when it comes to kids, but I think all of us are susceptible to it. Yeah, it's one of the more dangerous aspects of it for sure. It's often a chatbot, but at this point you can't tell. But it could be either. It could be either. Yeah. Yeah. Life's too short. Yes. I don't know. I think it's too early to tell. I have no doubt that it will have an impact. Particularly when you're disassociating with people face to face, you already see in interactions that people do act differently. That's more so when you know that the person on the other end isn't real. I think we do. We are seeing some of that already. Whether it's a full-on impact on the brain, I don't know if we can tell yet. But yeah, certainly, like we all know, people react differently online. There's evidence in other areas as well that where people are harsher when they're dealing with somebody that's not a physical human in front of them.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.